Dustin Poirier and Conor, the Notorious McGregor, will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99, or sign up to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $89.98. Visit ESPNPlus.com/MMA Junkie. That's ESPNPLUS.com/MMA Junkie.
Junkie Nation, it's time to roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Happy to be with you for the next hour. Gonna have a fun show here. You know, there's really no fights to look forward to this weekend on the major circuit. You know, the bigger promotions, the ones that are televised on huge networks. UFC, Bellator, and PFL are all off. There are some the bigger regional promotions that are out there, and I always guide you towards our schedule tab on MMA Junkie if you just want to get your hands on more fights. You know, UFC Fight Pass seems to always have something. So keep an eye out for that. Look, on today's show, we're obviously going to discuss some of the latest news. We'll catch up on some of that. Because since we've last spoken to you on Monday, we got some big news in the UFC's heavyweight division. Cyril Gane and Derek Lewis are going to fight for the UFC's interim heavyweight title at UFC 265 in August. That just don't seem right because Francis Ngannou, the undisputed champion, is healthy and he can go in September. And he just won the title 3 months ago. So we'll unpack that, see what's going on with that, what our suspicions are, what we've been able to dig up, and try and figure this thing out because that was pretty baffling news a few days ago when we heard that go down. Sean O'Malley is still on UFC 264. I know he's got a lot of fans, and probably a lot of our listeners are fans of his. He does have a fight coming up against Chris Moutinho, but not before every flyweight, bantamweight, and featherweight out there at least threw their name into the hat. Maybe not all of them, but quite a few. And I really think the UFC should have strongly considered that route for Sean O'Malley. We'll talk more about that. UFC women's MMA fighter Sarah Alpar, I don't know if you heard this, GoFundMe page for her to kind of assist with basically living the life of a fighter, training expenses. She says she's had some fights fall through and it's just been hard to make ends meet. She put a goal of 30,000 by like in a few months from now or something like that. She already met it and she got some interesting assistance. We'll talk about that. Tatiana Suarez is back, the undefeated strawweight, now returns as a flyweight. She's got a fight booked against Roxanne Modafferi, and Mike Beltran, a L.A. Sheriff's detective, first, primarily. He will join us on the show, but of course you all know him as the Stash Guy, longtime MMA judge and ref. Yeah, he does some judging, but mostly reffing. He'll join us at 9:30 a.m. Pacific, 12:30 p.m. Eastern time. So buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, July 1. Dustin Poirier and Conor, the Notorious McGregor, will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99, or sign up
to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $89.98. Visit ESPNplus.com/MMA Junkie.
What the hell? Like, seriously, we are on our 15th year of covering this sport, and it seems like when we think we can never be surprised, we get surprised, because no matter what, it's not like we haven't seen something like this where there's a healthy champion, a champion who's fought recently, who's ready to go, and yet the UFC kind of plays this little game, you know. Putting the interim title out there. But I don't remember one like this kind of like raw and recent. Like, I still have the memory of Ngannou beating Miocic and then, you know, having a little bit of fun, you know, doing the Tyson podcast, or, you know, he did a little bit of social media, and then he went back to Africa for about a month, had a great reception there, you know, as recently come back. That's all still recent to me, you know, like, why is the UFC going in the direction of doing an interim bout using a guy that just fought 25 minutes this past Saturday? Ciryl Gane defeated Alexander Volkov, and now he's going to be fighting in less than 2 months for the interim title. And earlier this year, by the way, he went 25 minutes with Jarzynia Rozenstruik. You know, look, let me throw out some details there, and then I'll let you chime in. UFC 265 takes place in Houston. But Houston sold out pretty quickly last time. And I don't know if it was more of a recent thing. We got to get our tickets. We got to see something. Or if they love them some MMA, which I think they do. People want to spend some money. But there would have been a title fight, by the way. Amanda Nunes is defending against Juliana Pena. So I know the UFC likes to promote a title. So there would have been one. Lewis could have still fought and gone, you know, and – obviously, that would have been a risk to Lewis, because a lot of people feel like Lewis is next. John Jones seemed to come in agreement with Francis Ngannou. But they could have featured him and had the Houston native. Again, to push tickets, I don't know, because they sold out so fast and they've been selling out so fast. So I don't know if that's something that they can predict and felt like they needed. But they had their title fight. They got a huge star in Ngannou. And honestly, he's not even like a superstar yet, but the trajectory for this guy is there. Why mess this up?
Politics. It's funny, when you said, what the hell? I could think of a bunch of things you could have been talking about. You know, that could have been Sean O'Malley. I mean, that's the problem with the UFC today, is there are a lot of what the hell moments. And we're hardcore fans, okay? We can't figure it out. So how in the hell are you supposed to expect a casual fan to tune in and figure this out? Casual fan got together with his buddies at a barbecue not that long ago and saw Francis Ngannou win the heavyweight title. Now they're deciding to tune in and they're going to hear, for the interim heavyweight title. What? What the hell? How often do people hear interim title? It's over and over and over again. This is something that should be used very sparsely, you know, every once in a while when things just, there's no remedy and something has to happen. That's not what's happening anymore. Now it's just getting thrown for anything the UFC doesn't like. And I think they're being a little unfair here. Unless they flat out come out and say, this guy's asking for too much money. All right. But the guy said he'd be ready, what, in August? Not that far away.
He said he'd be ready in September.
September?
But they want them in August.
Yeah. So that ain't that far off of what they want. You know, this just seems kind of like a power play. And it sucks because you don't have to really investigate too much to realize what's going on here. And it diminishes your title. You know, that you can't have too many people in the world being able to raise their hand and say, yeah, I was a heavyweight champion. Yeah, I was the lightweight champion. Like, after a while, your title just doesn't seem like it's much. It starts to look like a WWE title. It just gets passed on for no reason. You want these titles to mean something. You want fighters to not pass up a title shot to fight someone else because they're going to make a lot of money. You want them always going after the goal, the gold, because that's their goal in their career, is to be a world champion. That should always be the most important thing. And right now, it ain't about that. It's all about money, and it has nothing to do with the belts. And what does that sound familiar? I mean, what does that remind you of? Boxing, right? You're guys that give up their titles. They're just like, eh, whatever, I'll just fight this guy. We don't want our sport to turn into that, man. But it's starting to go that way.
And if you play your cards right, they can go hand in hand. You can get the gold, and guess what? That's where some of their bigger paydays come from, those pay-per-views. Not too many non-champions have been able to negotiate pay-per-views. And if they have, they've probably been at a smaller scale. 25 cents a pay-per-view, a dollar a pay-per-view. I don't know. Whatever it is, it's probably a fraction of what the champion gets. So that really is where the money is. So I would imagine being the best, wearing that gold, is a goal of yours that will also get you to the point where you're going to make more money inside the octagon and outside the octagon, or cage and or ring if we're talking about other sports. But it seems like a lot of fighters sometimes circumvent or play the card that they're not interested, but they always come back to money. I'm talking always come back to, very rarely do you see a fighter like play it so cool that you realize it's actually not for the money. Like, maybe even GSP surprised me as of late, taking it so in stride that he doesn't get the De La Hoya fight, you know, and kind of being calm about the fact that he's tied down to that contract with the UFC. You know, if he's going to compete anywhere, it's going to be in the UFC. And I haven't seen this uproar from a guy that's already been retired a full 4 years from a fight that was 3 years past his second to last fight. You know, so literally in the last seven, eight years, the guy's only had one fight, but yet he can't go take a boxing match against someone else and get a lucrative payday because he's tied to a contract. But I don't know. It's frustrating as hell. And again, I get Derek Lewis, who lives in Houston, from Louisiana originally, but lives in Houston, proud to fly the H-Town flag. I get it. But this fight's like in early August. It's really 5 weeks away. I was generous by saying less than 2 months. That could imply 7 weeks or – no, man, this is 5 weeks away. And it's for the interim title of a belt that was just won by a captivating big African fighter in great shape who can be a huge star for you. And he defeated – you know, he got over by beating the incumbent, who was arguably the greatest heavyweight ever, in Stipe Miocic. They're 1-1, by the way. You know, so they may not be interested in it right away, but a trilogy match between those two would be epic at some point. Mm-hmm. They got John Jones awaiting them, but so this could be a money play, you know, because Ngannou obviously said something on social media a while back, I think a few weeks back, when Logan Paul made $20 million against Floyd Mayweather. He was pretty respectful, and this was an emoji. How can we make that money? I think he said. Now, I don't know what his agent's doing behind the scenes. I don't know if he's causing an uproar. I don't know if he's scared the UFC off or what. But, again, they could have promoted a fight here with the women's GOAT, Amanda Nunes, defending against Juliana Pena, who's a good talker. They would have talked that up and just really, really stacked the card up nicely behind her. They didn't have faith that she could maybe sell pay-per-views. But they got their title fight. It's not that they don't have a title fight. They don't like to go into a pay-per-view without a title fight. But they had the title fight. And again, really, by putting Gon and Lewis on the card, the only thing you would have been risking is if you really wanted Lewis versus Ngannou, and more from the Lewis side, like he could be risking his title aspirations. Now, Lewis, anytime you talk to him, he tells you, I don't even care about that. I just want to get paid. So I don't even think he cares it's for the interim title. And then plus, how many times have we seen a fight for the interim title? And then right away, it's just this shit show when Rogan or someone comes in and starts interviewing him. I've seen him put it on the ground. I've seen him leave it behind inside the octagon. I've seen him say it's worthless. It doesn't mean anything. A few of them have held it tight, like Poirier, you know. And they should, man. It's a title. It's a major title, no matter what. Whatever the circumstances were, that's out of your control. You fought and you won, you know, under the rules of 5 rounds, 25 minutes, and you got to make the championship weight. But oftentimes I've seen the opposite, you know, where it just doesn't seem to mean much to them because they know there's just some badass out there that's really the undisputed champ, and now they got to unify at some point. Now, what is nice is this. when you become the interim champ, you get you do get pay-per-view points. So Lewis could be looking at it like that. Yeah, I may risk losing to Gon, but if I beat Gon, when I fight Ngannou, I'll get those pay-per-view points, which means he'll make more money. That I could see as a business decision. But again, you're going up against Gon, who's never lost and keeps looking better and better. So I don't know. But, you know, all that at the risk of what the UFC is so proud of, and that's being the major league of the major league promotion in MMA, a rival to MLB and NBA and NFL, you know, a promotion that could arguably be number one in the world. Yes, including soccer. These are comments made by Dana White. You don't get there by doing this.
Mm-hmm. And what are the ramifications of what's happening? Okay. For the longest time, we've been trying to figure out the heavyweight title picture. Where does John Jones fit in all this? Don't forget, Francis Ngannou and Stipe Miocic are 1-1. How long is Stipe going to sit around and wait? How long is John Jones going to sit around and wait? That felt like an eternity before this fight was announced. Now with this fight announced, that can set those other two guys even longer, right? When are we going to see John Jones at heavyweight? There's no way we see him at heavyweight not fighting for a title. That doesn't make sense business-wise, why they would do that, right? So that means the guy that's really going to get the shaft in all this is probably Stipe Miocic. And that's depending on how this fight plays out and when they can even unify the title. This is a mess, dude. This is garbage. This is terrible.
The one thing I'm led to believe just by the few cryptic tweets that I've seen is when Ngannou's manager said, hey, we can go in September, he kind of didn't mention, like, we can go in September, but we got to solve this too. He didn't really say that or imply that. So I'm wondering if the agreement on the money's there was just a difference of August 7th or September 25th, which is 6 weeks, to be fair, maybe even seven. But still, I just don't think that the UFC was really, really put in that horrific of a position because they still had the title fight. And you stack the card nicely, you can produce. You know, Conor versus Nate Diaz, those weren't for the title. They were out of their weight class, for crying out loud. Rashad versus Rampage, that wasn't for the title. You know, there's been a lot of times where fighters have fought in the main event and it wasn't for a title.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you promote it right, then and if you put a good enough card, the fans will buy it and they'll support you, and that'll be that. Maybe you create new stars on that particular night, you know? Some of those have been lucrative, by the way, the ones they just mentioned. I think Rashad and Rampage either just got to $1 million or very close. And for sure, Diaz and McGregor crushed. So, I don't know. It's just baffling to me. And I remember Ngannou had to wait a long time. And now they kind of did that to him. And again, could they be playing games and sending messages? Perhaps. I tried to go back to bat for the UFC because I realized how a lot of fighters can be. You know, they don't think about the UFC. They think about themselves, especially when they get bigger and bigger. So try dealing with 600 of those, you know, and probably 50 of them are prima donnas. I get it. You have to push back, but it has to make some sense. And I keep going back to the same analogy. Adam Silver, NBA commissioner, you don't think right now he wants the Lakers and the Celtics, or you don't think he wants the resurgence of the Knicks or the Spurs to maybe make another run, or Detroit basketball, Chicago, one of those big, you know, those big franchises that have had, you know, back-to-backs. Even the Warriors, I'll give them some love because they had an incredible run a few years ago. He wants those major stars performing, probably the Brooklyn Nets. But right now the hand he's dealt is the Bucks versus the Hawks. And guess what? Trae Young hasn't even been playing. I don't even know if Capella's playing. You know, those are two big news for them. Over in the West, Kawhi Leonard hasn't played. He missed two games last series. He missed this whole series, which went six games. Chris Paul missed some of them as well. You know, but they're battling, and those are the best teams, and those are the teams rising to the occasion, and those are the teams that are going to be in the finals and in the history books, because that's the way it should be done. You know, the result produced the matchups, and the matchups provide the history.
Now, let me ask you this. Who's the biggest loser in all this? Francis Ngannou, Stipe Miocic, or John Jones?
I don't think Miocic is ready yet. He didn't seem to be a frequent flyer. So I think he already knew he's going to wait out probably Ngannou, Lewis at least, and maybe fight in the fall. John Jones has not fought since February of 2020. So we're about the year and a half mark. And he, sometimes he says, just pay me and I'll fight. Other times he says, I'm still stacking, you know, I'm still building on this heavyweight frame. I'm sure they both have money, but, you know, John gave up the belt along the way. And I don't know. I think he could have possibly walked in either as a champ, or just walked in from continuing to fight at light heavyweight until he agreed to the heavyweight money, and then he just left the belt behind. But instead, he just left it abruptly, and he hasn't been earning. Stipe's older than John, so he's probably outside of his physical prime, whereas John, I think, is still low 30s, so you could still argue he's in physical prime, although, you know, some people say there's been a decline, people are testing him, people are pushing him farther, but he's still undefeated. So I would say John Jones is the biggest loser. You made a good point. Ngannou, once he settles down, he'll realize, well, I guess I got the winner. And I guess I got an extra few months off, and I'll just get the winner of one of these two cats, and that'll be that. Maybe I won't have to fight my former teammate, you know, or maybe I won't have to fight Black Beast, which I don't think he's scared of him, but he did technically lose to him. So there's an out there for if he were to lose to him, they'd be 1-1 as well, just like he is with Miocic. So I would say John Jones. But I don't even know if he realizes it.
I think it's Stipe, because I know you hate the analogy, but Father Time is keeps doing its thing, and he's getting older, and I don't see him getting back into that mix for a while. He's going to have to take another fight, I think.
I wonder if he was even approached to be one of the two combatants in Houston. Probably not, but, you know, when you're a former champ with four title defenses, I don't think you're too far out of the mix, but we'll see. I mean, look, that's just the latest there. It looks like the fight's going to go down August 7th in Houston, UFC 265 as the main event, UFC interim title, Ciryl Gane versus Derek Lewis. I suppose the winner goes against the undisputed champion, Francis Ngannou, not in September, but maybe Vegas at the end of the year. November is a frequent stop in New York. Those usually are labeled as huge, huge cards for the UFC. Mm-hmm. Anyway, all right. What about this whole Sarah Alper thing? Kind of comedic again. You know, GoFundMe, look, bro, you don't know how many times I've looked at that and said, wow, that's so cool. People, I've donated to GoFundMe. I just don't know if I could ever ask people to do that to me, you know, if I was ever in a situation where I needed it. Especially if it blows up, you almost turn bashful. Now, there are times, obviously, where I'd be like, yeah, give me the money, you know, whatever. But seriously, it probably took a lot of courage for her to do that. Some people will say, well, maybe she just has no shame and she just went for it. I don't know. I really don't know. I don't know how to answer that one.
Her manager.
Yeah, she did it, and she got the help. She got $30,000, $25,000 allegedly from Triller. I think they've even said it was them. And $5,000 from Jake Paul. Now, where this obviously takes an interesting twist is Jake Paul's very critical of UFC fighter pay. So he's actually helping out a UFC fighter. Does that sting Dana White? He'll never tell you that it does, but I'm not convinced that he does. He might just think, well, he's stupid. He gave her $5,000. That's on him. But, you know, there's a lot that goes with this, because Dana will talk to a lot of mainstream media who will obviously tell him, look, I know you do your interviews with these hardcore sites like MMA Junkie, you know, and the other ones that are out there that cover the sport. And I know that there's a way that you talk to them. But in the real world here, you kind of look like you got punked a little bit, especially this other promotion chiming in and doing the same thing. And they're paying some of your ex-athletes pretty good money. Money good enough that they're saying it's their best payday ever, you know? That part bothers him when he's confronted in that way. But again, he goes to bed knowing he's got half a billion in the bank. So he gets over it quick. But I know sometimes it can sting him, because let's not forget, the UFC is his baby. You can have all the money in the world that you want. When you have when it's your baby, you know, you get used to people throwing rose petals at your feet, you know, and just telling you how great you are every day. And when you're just maybe not having that type of a day, and someone asks you something that sounds like hey, man, you know, something's not right here with your business. It's things. And that's when he has his meltdowns.
When we say that's not a good look for the UFC, I started thinking about that. Who are the people that even talk about that? I think it's just us, really. Like, in our eyes, yeah, it's not a good look for the UFC. But who's pushing Dana White and the UFC on it? What? When do you open the paper and read about those things that we say are a bad look? They just keep getting away with it. And, yeah, I mean, it's not a good look, but at the same time, like, I'm not so sure that they get pushed on these types of things. And I think at the end of the day, what it comes down to is people care right now for Sarah, but after a while, they don't care. You know, fighters always kind of just, they'll care as a group until one of them makes enough money where they no longer need to depend on the group. And then they just care about themselves. Okay. And I think that's why things never really change. But I will say that over the last couple years, you can see a little bit more pressure on the UFC as far as fighters asking for more money and some of them getting good deals, I think, when the time is right. Jorge Masvidal kind of strikes me as one of those guys that right time, right place. Right. Some of them can strike gold. And I know it's probably stung them at the time. But more than likely, they're going to come out the winner on most of these. But yeah, Triller doing that and Jake Paul. It's a little poke, but I don't know what it does, you know?
Well, you know, it's just going to come up. See, this is the type of thing coming up here, UFC 264 here in Las Vegas, Poirier versus McGregor 3, where you're going to have a lot of mainstream media, you know. And so a lot of the hardcore media, it's not like we won't ask the question, but we kind of already know the answer. We've done the song and dance with them for 2 decades. You know, he'll obviously fire back at them, say derogatory stuff, and that'll be that. And then he'll move on to, let's talk about the main event, you know, which is what he's there for. But he's going to do a lot of media because he wants to sell to casuals, and that's where that will probably come up, you know. I don't blame them because it's probably at the top of your Google alert, you know, if you're searching UFC and latest news and hot topics or whatever. So he'll have to just kind of, you know, dance around through it. But I bet you he wishes this would have happened in mid-July and not early July. You know, but it is just something that happened that he will get asked about, and he'll have to defend UFC fighter pay one way or another. And but at the same time, this kid, Jake Paul, is just a nag, you know. I mean, he knows how to needle Dana White, doesn't back down from Dana White, and he kind of has the support of some MMA fighters who are like, yeah, get him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't hate on that kid, man. He's doing the work in the ring, in the gym, and he's having fun. He's doing his thing. I really, really can't hate on him too much. He's not the type of guy that I'd probably hang out with and have a beer with, but he's doing his thing.
I give him some love, but I do stop at I do stop at, you know, this whole pro boxer thing. Let's let that unfold. 3-0 mm-hmm. against a former NBA fighter. Sorry, an NBA player against a YouTube guy. And against, you know, an MMA fighter who was an amazing wrestler and a great MMA fighter, but he'll be the first to tell you striking wasn't his forte. You know, that's a different 3-0 versus 3-0 versus other boxers, other professional boxers. Let's get to that, you know. But has he marketed himself well? Yeah. You know, is he a YouTube sensation even before that? Yeah. You know, a lot of kids love him. Him and his brother. So kudos, props there. But, you know, who knows, man? Maybe he'll be 10-0 and knock out some pro boxers, and that'll be that. So we'll see. All right, folks, don't forget, we are going to catch up here with Mike Beltran in just a couple minutes. He's actually on standby, here goes. We'll be talking to him a lot sooner than we thought. But I want to tell you, Dustin Poirier and Conor, the Notorious McGregor, will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier evened the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99, or sign up now to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual account for $89.98. Visit ESPNplus.com/MMAJunkie. That's ESPNplus.com/MMAJunkie. We'll be back with Detective Beltran, but also known in the MMA circles as Ref and Judge Extraordinaire. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Ghost from MMA Junkie Radio. The final chapter in the rivalry between Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor will be written on Saturday, July 10th at UFC 264. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99. Visit ESPNplus.com/MMAJunkie.
There he is, the one and only Mike Beltran. Now, we're going to, for Detective, Ref, Judge, or how about we call you Ibarra?
Well, man, Ibarra's dead.
That's true. That's true. But you never know with these series, man. Sometimes it's a theme or something. I was just going to say, welcome to Junkie Radio. It's been a long time coming. You know, last year we talked to Frank Tridd, good friend of ours, former co-host. And I, when he told us you were a sheriff and detective, or working for, you know, working for the sheriffs, I was like, God, why haven't we got this guy on the show? Because I've admired your work for so many years. Seeing you, you know, grow as a referee through all these promotions and now getting these title fights. I remember the Fedor fight. So literally going back to last year, we've wanted to get you on the show. Our bad for dropping the ball. We went from 5 days a week to 2 days a week. So sometimes it's a little tougher to, you know, he's in the loop. But really, it's an honor to have you on the show, Mike.
Hey, thank you very much, and thank you for the compliments. I'm just happy to be here.
Well, listen, we're huge fans of Mayans. So, first of all, allow us to geek out on that. What was that like for you? I mean, you already lead a pretty interesting life as an MMA referee and judge, and then also working for the sheriffs in Los Angeles, now as a detective, for almost 30 years. So, like, how was that experience for you?
You know what, Mayans was an amazing experience, man. I worked with some amazing people, really cool people, man, down to earth people, and it definitely was. I was just happy to be there. It was a privilege, man. I did work my tail off to get in there and to study my lines. I actually did have an acting coach. I did all the things that I had to do to sell the part and to not embarrass myself or to disappoint the people that co-signed for me. You know what I'm saying? Cause you don't want to disappoint the people that were good to you. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
So it was working with Emilio Rivera, JD, you know, Pardo and you know, which is Easy and Angel and Coco and all those guys on the cast. Rocco, that's my homie right there. Rocco Vincent Vargas. You know, his father's is the legendary cutman, Carlos. So that's his son. Army Ranger, he's a stud. You know, with all the great folks that I work with, Elgin James and, you know, Debbie Moore, Munoz, the writers. It was an experience, man, and Frankie Loyal, all those guys, man, Creeper. One thing that I did enjoy about it, guys, is that this is the first time that it was a primarily Latino cast, and they have given Latinos an opportunity to have leading roles. And from Sons of Anarchy to this transition into Mayans, it has taken off. So it was awesome to be a part of that transition and to be a part of the show, and it was just a good opportunity that they gave me to be a part of something special.
Can you give us a peek behind the curtain? Because you're so busy, did you know that you probably had to have a limited role, which was the end of season two and then working through season three, or by your choice, could you have kept this thing going? Because I was sad to see you go.
I don't have a choice in nothing, brother. So I didn't have a choice in anything. When I was told that I was going to have my amazing exit and I was going to die, it sucked. But you know, I had a good run, man. I was in it for 2 seasons. I'm still doing stuff with the show, some more behind the scenes stuff. That'll be something that I can talk about later as it progresses. But there's something down the road that's coming with the mines. It's going to be very interesting. So I'm still a part of what they got going on. You know, I did not have a choice. You don't have a choice. You know, the writers are the ones who write you. And then at the end of the day, they can take you out. But it's a show that everybody gets killed. So, you know, something's going to hit you when you're playing the role of a gangster and some fool. You know, it's not going to work out for you, brother. So at some point, every dog has their day.
Yeah, but you're an MMA guy, man. I could have used a few more seasons, and then if you had to roll, you had to roll. But
I know, dude. I know, man.
I mean, you're the part. You're the actual part. You know, you ride. I've seen your bike. You know, I think you call it the Vicla or something like that.
I call it La Chola. That's my bike, man. Yeah, that's my Vicla.
So you're the part, and you know, it's just fun to root for MMA guys and gals when they get these opportunities. So that's why I say it that way, I guess. I mean, you know, I can't control how they write the show, but it just stung. You know, I was like, fucking A, when I saw it happen. I was so mad.
it hurt, man. But you know, it's brother, man. I'm one of these dudes, like an MMA. Just like in MMA, man, it's a privilege to be where I'm at. It's not a sense of entitlement, bro. You know, it's something that I take very serious, and that's something that's a beautiful thing, bro. It's something that it's a privilege, and I work every event as if it's my last, and I give everything I have in everything I do, and being a part of this show was a privilege. It wasn't a sense of entitlement. I wish I would have had an opportunity to stay there longer. You know, it would have been great, but you know, who knows what other doors are going to open down the road. And if other doors open, then hey man, I'm going to walk through it and I'm going to explore it. And if nothing else comes of it, brother, I'm blessed, man. I was a part of an amazing show, an amazing cast that most people don't get an opportunity to do, such as MMA. So that's how I look at things.
Okay. Well, because of your fascinating careers, we'll transition in a sec, but I do want to give Goz a question, an opportunity. Goz, do you want to ask Mike any Mayans related questions? Because Goz is as big of a fan of the show as I am. And that even goes back to Sons of Anarchy. We just love those shows. Go ahead, Goz.
Well, I was going to reserve my stupid question for the end of the interview, but because it has to do with the Mayans, every time I think we've ever run into you at some point in person, we've had a question about the beard and what it would take for you to cut it. And we've gotten close, I think, in the past, but it usually revolves around how about I take the scissors and stab you guys with it. But I'm going to figure one out. What about this? The producers call you in from Mayans and they go, guess what? Your character got a twin brother, exactly like you, but no beard. You want the part? What happens? You take the part. He's never going to break, George. He's never going to break. There's no scenario we could ever give him. We would never do it.
It's not negotiable.
No. Hey, Mike, why haven't you checked them? It's mustache, not beard, right?
It's a mustache, yeah.
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 My bad. It's a
mustache.
Yeah, so he checked me in Sacramento when I was asking him. I saw you in 2013. I think I said beard, and he goes, first of all, it's a mustache. And that finger was like right by my nose. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, mustache.
He came home and he goes, I think I got closer, but I still got to know. And I remember Trigg said, it's impossible. It's impossible. We're like, all right. But,
yeah. Nah, it ain't going to happen.
Let me ask you this. When you run into people from high school, from junior high, when people go, hey, do you know what Mike Beltran does now? What do you think they would guess if they didn't know what you actually do? And if they did know that you did acting and MMA reffing and all that, which one seems more believable for them, if you had to guess?
I mean, people that know me know that I was a deputy first. Mm-hmm. That I was a cop, because I worked the area that I grew up in East LA. So it's kind of, you know, they saw me out on the street, or I handled calls for service, you know, whether a shooting or something, you know, horrible happened to them, or there were victims of crimes. So that would probably be the first thing. Those that are from East LA, they would know that they know that I'm a cop. But, you know, in general, you know, from the surface, from like, what do you think I would do by the way I look? You know, I'd probably think I'm, you know, I don't know, that I'm some biker or something.
No, by the way you look, just by the way you were in high school. So sometimes we'll get fighters, yeah, and they go, dude, I was never even in a fight or in trouble in school. So when I tell them I'm a fighter, they all trip out. What do you think people would just assume that you did with your life?
100%, 100%, no doubt about it, I was going to be a cop. I knew I wanted to be a cop since I was a kid. I followed in my cousin's footstep, you know, who joined the Marines and became a cop, and he worked out of Inglewood, PD, and I did everything my cousin did. You know, he grew up in La Puente, and you know, we didn't grow up with a whole lot of stuff. You know, I grew up in East LA, they were in La Puente, and you know, we didn't have a whole lot of anything, and to just like him, and it is with me, with my cousin, is that we just felt it was important to be a part of our community and serve it, you know, and there was no question about it that I was going to be a cop. This is my dream job. I get the best of both worlds out of three worlds. I get to be an MMA referee as well, and I'm also acting, which is something that I really enjoy, and I have a blessed life, man. Life is, you know, it's been good to me. So there's 100% I was going to be a cop, no doubt.
You know, we used to do a lot of military trips, right? And we would take fighters with us. And right away, that connection between the fighters and the military was very quick. You know, they would bond because they shared a lot of similarities. Within your worlds that you've lived in, what would you say is the one intangible that, you know, working with the police, being an MMA ref, being an actor, what's the one intangible that all three have?
I think that's a very good question. And I think one thing that's the glue that holds everything together, we all love MMA. You know, we all love MMA. You can always talk about fights. You can always talk about fighters. You can talk about certain fights, what fight really you loved, what fight you didn't like. I can't believe this fighter lost. It's something that's a good talking point. And the glue that holds everything together, and it's an excellent piece of conversation, is MMA. I mean, that's probably the biggest thing.
Mike, I read up on you a lot before, you know, we did this, and I want to parlay a little bit of what Goz was saying, you know, about your early life. You seem very focused, following your cousin's footsteps, you know, Marines, and then you went to the LA Sheriffs. But was this always a story of Mike Beltran wanting to do the right thing? Or was this the type of a story where it was a turnaround? Like, how were you as a kid? Did you get in any trouble? Or, you know, did you actually not, I guess, and make your parents proud? Which I know that you and your sisters have, because, you know, you've acquired degrees and you guys have done so much as a family, and a lot of it you attribute to them pushing you. But did Mike Beltran, you know, throw rocks through windows, pick, you know, get in fights, do any bad stuff at all at the bowling alley, Downey, somewhere?
Oh boy, you know what, you ask a question, I'm going to answer it. I was always a good kid, you know, but I did get into stuff. You know, I was a, you know, I went through four different high schools. I got kicked out of three high schools in 1 year, you know, oh, wow, when I was a kid. I hated bullies, and I was always fighting when I was a kid. You know, whether they were picking on my cousins or you know, a good friend or something like that, I always stood up to the bully. I just didn't like bullies. I hate, you know, I just don't like people taking advantage of people. And I grew up boxing as a kid. Not that I wanted to, to show what I knew, because I don't think I was the greatest boxer, but I was okay. You know, more on the sucking side, but I trained. But I always stood up for, I believe, what was right. That doesn't necessarily mean I was right either, because I was, you know, I ran around with the wrong crowd, you know, when I was a kid. You know, growing up in the neighborhood and bouncing around from place to place. Garfield High School was my fourth high school, and that's where I ended up at. And I went there 10th, 11th, and 12th grade year. So I went to all these different schools as a kid in ninth grade. And, you know, I was a good kid with good intentions. I was not a part of gangsters. I never liked, you know, I never liked cholos. I never got down with gangs. I always thought cowards run in packs. So that wasn't my thing. But, you know, when it came down to a ditching party and an opportunity to play spin the bottle with some chicks in a ninth grade, I was all about it. So, you know, you get a Boone's Farm bottle, you spin it. And, you know, I was all about that, and playing quarters and, you know, little parties and backyards and stuff. And it got me into some trouble because I ran with the wrong crowd. And but, you know, I'm a kid, you know, and I was a kid then. And you grow up and you live and learn. But, no, was I a nightmare for my parents? Yes, that's why I love them so much, for putting up with me and leading me in the right direction and not giving up on me. And that's what you do as parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then you go to the Marines, and then you go to you become a sheriff. Mm-hmm. And I read that, yes, you wanted to be stationed near where your neighborhood was, because you wanted to, I guess was that a form of giving back? And also reaching out to the younger Mike Beltrans, the younger youths, to show them that, you know, that you can turn it around. I mean, look, I mean, almost every boy probably gets into some trouble, you know, but at some point you just got to figure it out, you know, and become a member of society, a responsible one. Was that kind of like why you wanted to stay local like that?
You know what? There was no question in my mind what station I was going to work. I knew I was going to work East LA Sheriff Station. And I was there for many years, and it was important to me. I didn't even think of anything else. I knew that was my number one choice. That's where I wanted to go. I didn't have a problem working the area that I grew up in, because I didn't treat people, you know, like crap. I treated people the same way I wanted my mother to be treated. You know, I was always straight up. There was no reason to treat anybody any different. I think I was always very fair. I'd kick a lot of people loose for small things, and I wouldn't sweat the small things. And I definitely didn't give tickets, because I couldn't give someone a ticket for stuff that I would do. So we didn't give tickets at East LA Station. We let that for the Highway Patrol to do. I don't give tickets. I think I've given less than 3 tickets, and that's because I was on training in 27 years I've been working. So it was important to me to go back to the area that I grew up in, and if, you know, there's a whole lot of Boy Scout still in me, and if you're a cop, I think a lot of us have it, and you have to have that good wholesome stuff. You want to do the right thing, as cliche as that sounds, you want to do the right thing for people, and you got to be real, and you can't sweat the small stuff. There's letter of the law, and there's spirit of the law. And if you're going to give someone a break for something small that's going to help them out down the road, you go with your heart, as long as they're not doing something that's egregiously criminal, and you let them go. You know, there's a lot of things. We have a lot of leniency in what we can do. So that's kind of how I policed.
3 tickets in 27 years. That's amazing. But, you know, you remind me of Hodges from Colors. That's an 80s reference. I think we're similar in age. Do you understand who I'm talking about? Robert Duvall. Yeah. You know, he talked to the community. You know what I mean? And he seemed to get farther that way. Granted, there's a part of the plot where maybe it stings him a little bit, because he may have let one of the bad guys go. But regardless, it's a movie. But I remember loving that movie and just loving his role, you know, because as a young guy, I felt like there was some time where cops weren't like that, and it didn't come off well, you know. And I never wanted to grow up hating authority, because they were just doing their job.
You know, that's a good reference, you know. But I also was raised you know, my parents come from, my dad comes from Culiacán, Sinaloa, and my mom from Tepehuanes, Durango. And we were, how we were raised to respect authority. We were raised to yes sir, no sir, law enforcement. You know, my parents were very thankful and grateful to being here, and they worked their tails off, you know, and we saw that, and we saw that they never spoke negative about cops. Now, you know, there was no reason for the cops to come to our house unless, you know, or anything like that, or my tios or friends, because we weren't doing anything crazy, but the neighbors were, you know, and we just knew just to stay away, and that's their get now. I'm just going to stay over here before some bullets start flying, you know, and you just kind of mind your P's and Q's. And I didn't see anything, man. Just look the other way. It's none of my business, man. But you stay in your lane and you stay in yours, and we're straight.
Yeah. Hey, real quick, since I brought up colors, 2-1, man, does that really exist, 21st Street Gang? Because I know White Fence is real, the Crips and the Bloods, but was 2-1 made up, or are there people rolling? You know, excuse me,
brother, with that one. Man, the only one that is 1111 Street Ranker. Remember that one? Boulevard Nights?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, man. So. Big BGV. That's an old school one. 2-1 is now, man. That was Hollywood, just like Boulevard
Nights. Not unbelievable. Yeah.
You know, but it's a good storyline, man.
I'm gonna blow your mind right now. I'm gonna blow your mind. Guess who was in that movie that you probably don't know?
What's that?
I said, I'm going to blow your mind right now. Guess who was in that movie that you probably missed?
Rico Suave.
Nope. He was in the movie, but you didn't miss him. But we know that Don Cheadle's in it, Robert Duvall, Sean Penn. But I'll give you one more guess.
Maria Conchita Alonso.
Yeah, she's in it. She's a big star. Mario Lopez is in it. You seen him? He was. Yeah, he's one of the young guys when they're doing 2-1 and they're walking up that, you know, it looks like they're going uphill. And Larry Looney Tunes. He's kind of off to the side, and I don't think he has any speaking parts, but he's in it, right, Goz? You can co-sign.
Yeah, he's just walking through. He doesn't say anything, but you could see his face.
Wow, man, his hair must have been on point, man. He was all feathered and combed back, I bet.
It was before Bayside.
Yeah. That's right, man. Yeah, man. Before he was Slater, man. His hair was on point as Slater as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, good for Mario, man. Yeah, he's representing San Diego, man. Good for him.
Yeah. Well, listen, let's transition to MMA. Again, what a career. You know, I believe Joe Camacho was an influence in your life through jiu-jitsu, and I think he put you in contact with John McCarthy. And I guess more than anything, when you saw MMA, you knew you wanted to be a part of it. What drew you to the referees?
Well, what drew me to referee, I was training at I still train at New Breed Academy, right? And back then, there used to be a lot of fighters I would train at, or Charlie Valencia, which is my best friend. Obviously, Joe Camacho, rest in peace, would train there. That was like, we grew up together. And I would go to the fights to go support them, right? And I would look at the referees, and I would see them, you know, go through their progression and everything else. And I told myself, you know what, I think I can do that. So I asked my instructor, which is John Iwano and Johnny Ramirez, but John Iwano was the one who made the first glove for the UFC. And he was Big John's friend. And that's where the connection happened, was through John Iwano. And he told me that, you know what, I got a friend, his name is Big John McCarthy. I go, you know Big John? He goes, yeah, he's a homie. I'm like, oh my God, you know. And the connection was made with Big John, and the rest is history, man. You know, John has taken me under his wing. I love him and his family to death. You know, they're just amazing people. He's a solid dude. There's nothing I wouldn't do for John, because of the human being that he is, how he is, where his heart's at. You know, he's yelled at me a lot. You know, no one's yelled at me more than in this sport than Big John has. But he does that because he cares, and he knows he can give it to you straight, you know. And I've learned so much. I always learn from John. I listen to his podcast, Weighing In. It's amazing, because you got John breaking stuff down, and Josh Thompson is a good partner for him to have on that podcast. And they're both, they work well with each other. And there's nothing but compliments I can say about Big John, and he has helped me out. I still call him for personal things, MMA things, and I always learn from John no matter what. So he's helped out not only me, but he's helped out so many people that want that knowledge. He's got it. He'll give it to you. And if you listen to him and you do what he says, you're going to be okay.
Yeah, well, so Goz and I, we live in Vegas now, but we're originally from the mean streets of Santa Ana, so just a little south of you. But we've always rooted for the SoCal guys, you know, and I really enjoyed watching you and Herzog kind of rise through, you know, a lot of the California shows, and then saw you a lot at Bellator. Can you talk about that journey of the ref and how you don't just walk into title fights? I mean, literally, it's a long progression. Is it determined by just the history of the sport, commissions, or, you know, maybe even the other senior refs? Do they kind of give a nod as to when they know you all are ready for, you know, those main events and the title fights? And did it ever test your patience?
Well, to get to a title fight and work your way to the top is pay your dues. You have to have repetitions. You have to make good calls. You have to have the senior official support you and take their constructive criticism and take it well and don't be retaliatory towards it, you know, and argue. And, you know, there's times, you know, where you need to hold your ground on certain things, and then you talk about it later, you know, where in fact you were right. And this sport here is with the officials is that good thing that everything's videotaped, so you can go back and watch it and learn. But it's just, you got to pay your dues, man. You know, nothing happens overnight. If you're that guy or gal that wants to get through this whole thing because you have a sense of entitlement, you're going to get exposed, because even at this high level, we still make mistakes. There's stuff that I wish I could take back that I've done, you know, and there's stuff that you know, I wish I could get a redo, or, you know, we all talk about it, and you got to pay your dues. And then the commissions eventually develop trust in you. The fighters have trust in you. They believe in you, that you're going to make the right decision, which is paramount, which is safety of the fighter. And if you do that, and it takes time, and you don't rush the process, brother. You just don't. You rush the process, it's a recipe for disaster, because you're going to have incompetent officials that want instant gratification without paying your dues, and they don't belong there. That's my opinion.
Well, like I say, it's really, really rewarding for us to watch people that have contributed so much eventually get that platform. You know, you brought up Josh Thompson earlier, and I remember Thompson versus Diaz was high profile for you. And then Fedor versus Mir in Chicago was another one that was big. You know, I mean, you've got a lot of them, Mike. I realize that. But I'm saying to connect with what the casual audience thinks of big fights. Because I tell everybody, the guy that's fighting in the, you know, San Manuel or something like that in the main event, that's his Super Bowl. So I don't ever want to diminish those fights. And I'm talking about, again, the ones that correlate with the casuals. But and then recently seeing you with Figueroa and Moreno, that's got to be super rewarding for you. And I want to know, what does your family think of that career, the way it blossomed, along with what you've been able to contribute as a deputy and now detective for LA Sheriffs?
You know what? Like I said, it's a privilege, man. My family's very supportive of what I do. You know, my lady's very supportive. I have a good supporting cast here at home, you know, and as well as my close-knit friends. But the progression and everything that has happened, it's rewarding, because I did it my way. I went through all the local level shows, the club shows, and worked my way to the top. And does it mean that I cannot work the lower level shows? Because a fight's a fight, and you get experience. I still do, with the exception of this pandemic, all of us, not just me, Jason, you know, Frank Trigg and Jason Herzog, myself, all these other, Big John Wood, Herb, we all have done amateur shows, and we still do them. So why do we do it? Because we want to get better. In addition to getting better, we learn as we're going along, and it keeps you relevant. It keeps you sharp. So when you do a big show, so whether it's a high level, mid level, or amateur show, you try to get in as much reps as you can. My family has supported it. They're proud of what I have done. And it's a, you know, at any given day, guys, this can get taken away, which is why it's a privilege. I can't stress that enough. It's a privilege to be here. And you take that every time you get into, you know, whether you do an amateur show, I treat them as if they're UFC, it's a UFC main event, because they deserve that. They deserve the best of you. It's a tough way to make a living. It's an honorable profession, but it's a very tough way to make a living being a fighter. And they need officials that are going to give them the best of them. And that's how I look at things. And that's my motto in my head. And I'm happy to be here, you know?
I remember when Herb Dean won one of his awards for best referee, he said, you know, thank you all obviously for, giving me this award, because it was given to him by the fans. The fans vote on it, the World MMA Awards. But I remember one part of his speech was, it can sometimes be a thankless job. How do you feel about it? Like, you know, we live in a day where social media, like, you do one wrong thing or something that's considered wrong in somebody's opinion, and it's like a catastrophe, you know? But there's not enough attaboys. And I know you guys aren't really fishing for those, but, you know, really – the sport isn't what it is without people like yourself and John and Herb and Jason and Frank and everybody else getting in there and doing something that very, very, very few people on this planet can do. I've often told John, because he's been in our studio a lot, I just think you should all get paid a lot more, because there's not many of you, you know, that have those nerves of steel to do what you do. But do you still love doing what you do? And do you see yourself doing this, like, for how long, how much longer?
I'm going to do this job. I mean, I love what I do. It's a passion. I love it. I get excited about getting an assignment. I get excited over working at UFC or a Bellator or any show, especially the big ones, which is what you strive for, is to work the big shows and do the big fights. So long as I'm healthy, so long as I don't lose a step or too many steps where I'm going to be a danger to a fighter because of my pride, I'll continue doing it until I'm no longer capable of doing this physically or mentally. And at that point there, I would rather do kind of like what Big John did, walk away gracefully, than being that guy that, hey dude, it's time for you to step down. I don't want somebody to tell me. I'll know where I'm at, even if it takes somebody to tell me that cares for me, you know. But I would rather do it on my own terms. But you got to be real with yourself. So long as I'm healthy, you know, God willing, it you know, stay healthy for a while. But I'm here to stay for as long as I can. So long as, you know, I'm competent enough to do this job, then I'll stick around.
I just realized, between talking about Mayans and Mario Lopez and colors, we were a little bit past the time that we had talked about. I hope you're okay on time, and I apologize that we extended it a little bit.
it's all good, bro. It's all good.
Okay. So I just want to close with this. Obviously, the fans being back is tremendous. People love the fans. It's the big shows and everything. But what's been the experience for you with no fans versus fans? Do you prefer anything? And I hope you don't think it's a dumb question, because I'm wondering if maybe your communication with fighters is better when it's more quiet, you know, and obviously you're thinking safety, not, you know, are the fans enjoying? I mean, I know you want the fans to enjoy the fight, but your job has to do so much with communication and safety. What do you prefer? What setting?
I mean, obviously the crowds is amazing. You can hear the roar of the crowd, the electricity in the crowd. I mean, how loud that was in Phoenix when the Moreno fight and Figueiredo, you know, that card was just electric. Obviously crowds and being there is good, and it's amazing. Man, it's just insane. having a crowd is the way to go because it's a full MMA experience. But without a crowd, it's funny that you ask that question because when I'm in there, I don't hear much of anything. I don't hear, I'm focused on, I'm looking for fouls. I'm looking to see if a fighter's hurt. I'm looking for the next big thing that's going to end this fight and positionally where I'm going to be at, what side I'm on is I'm looking at, is this guy taking more? Because you see a lot of things that the camera doesn't pick up. So I try to be on the side that I think the fighter is going to be hurt where I can make a stoppage, you know, and those are the things. And then in my mind, it's quiet in there, believe it or not, until there's a sequence ending blows or like, you know, a guy gets dropped and then there's some ground and pound or a submission is being fixed, you know, about to happen. And this is how educated the crowd is in the sport that they're like, they know exactly what that submission is. And then they know the evolution of it and how the outcome is going to be. And if you can defend it, then the crowd goes nuts. Then it wakes you up. You're like, oh man, it's loud in here. But for the most part, the crowd is the way to go. But being in there when it's quiet, it's kind of quiet in there for me when I'm officiating, even though I can hear the crowd, it's like a buzz, but not a super quiet without a crowd, but I still, it's kind of a similarity, but 100% the crowd's the way to go.
There you go. All right, Mike. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for jumping on here with us. Again, we've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. Frank has said so many good things about you. He considers you a mentor. The same way you spoke about John McCarthy is the way Frank talked about you. I don't know if you know this, but he used to co-host Tag Radio with us years ago when we first got started. He actually helped us tremendously. So we keep in contact with him, and it's been great to see him go from fighter to now stuntman and MMA rep. But he really does think the world of you. Even when he talks about how Beltran yelled at me, you know, or whatever. But he says, that's the way he grows. So yeah, anyway.
Frank is great, man. He's a good dude, man. Frank and I we're very close. You know, I love his wife as well. I got nothing but love for Frank, and Frank has picked up the slack from us getting yelled at. So he's the one that gets he's the guy that gets chewed out now. And Frank takes it on the chin and keeps on trucking. But it is fun messing with Frank, though. I kind of like it.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully things are already clearing up, but as really things really start to pick up at the end of the year and everybody's jumping around, we'd love to have you in our studio at Mandalay Bay, maybe do a part two, because again, such an interesting life that you lead, and I'm glad the audience got to hear some of it. You know, your acting, your work with LA Sheriffs, and of course, your great job that you do for many years, almost two decades as a ref and judge. So thank you, Mike, for the time today.
Yeah, guys, thank you very much, and you guys be safe, man. Thank you. Thank you for having me. Gracias.
Thank you.
All right.
You guys take care. Guys.
Take care.
Bye.
Yeah. There you have it, folks. Mike Beltran. That was fun, wasn't it, Goz?
Yeah. That's been a long time coming. But yeah, I'm glad we got to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, MMA fans, Dustin Poirier and Conor the Notorious McGregor will settle the score at UFC 264 on Saturday, July 10th, exclusively on ESPN+. After Conor McGregor defeated Poirier in 2014, Poirier even the score in January, setting up the most highly anticipated rubber match, in UFC history. UFC 264 is exclusively available to ESPN Plus subscribers for $69.99, or sign up now to get UFC 264 and an ESPN Plus annual plan for $89.98. Come on, folks, do the math. Do the latter one. For an extra $20, you get ESPN Plus for the year. And let me tell you, it's not just The Ultimate Fighter, The Return of the Ultimate Fighter, it's called. It's not just the original programming. It's other sports as well. All right? I've been watching a lot of basketball, soccer there. Definitely worth the money. But this package deal, it's a no-brainer. Visit ESPNPlus.com/MMAJunkie. That's ESPNPLUS.com/MMAJunkie. All right. So, those, just to finish up here with MMA news or whatever, what did you think of the route they went with Sean O'Malley, Chris Moutinho? I don't want to slam the kid, but I've never heard of him. Obviously, he's not a tomato can. You know, successful on the regional circuit. But when guys like Cody Stamen, Mirab Davilashvili, and Tim Elliott are offering their services, I would think that would be attractive to the UFC, A, because they're known fighters. And I think that just makes another matchup on UFC 264. Not that they need it, because they got Poirier versus McGregor 3, for crying out loud. But still, it's another matchup. But wouldn't every fighter that gets asked, who do you want next, they usually want someone higher in the rankings, you know, to continue the progression. And at least Davilashvili and Stamen would have done that. Stamen came with the caveat of, I can only make 145. Davilashvili said, I can make 35. And by the way, Davilashvili was clear in saying, I'll fight now. And then in September, he's supposed to fight Marlon Moraes. I'll do that too. So what do you think, man? I'll be frank and honest. People say the UFC protects this guy, you know. Do you feel the same way?
Yeah. I think it's incredibly honest that I think the UFC should be looking for a higher level opponent. But at the same time, I think Sean should be asking for that as well. At the very minimum, I think you have to get somebody that's at least on the level of Lewis Smolka, which was his original opponent. They didn't do that, you know, and it's no disrespect to this kid, but they went outside of the organization to bring somebody in when there were plenty of people with their hands up to take that fight that were already in the organization. It's just, and we say it a lot, it's not a good look. But I'm sure if you sat down with UFC and they said, they would probably say, look, dummy, this is why we do it. Yeah, I get that. But don't make it so obvious, is what I would tell them.
Yeah, it's a good way of putting it. Because I know there's a lot of times the UFC obviously crafts a plan for certain fighters that are popping, you know, and they have their reasoning. It also goes against what they tell us publicly in other occasions, you know, the best fight the best. If you can't hang here, then what are you doing here? You know, like that type of thing. So It gets, you know, we hear that and you hear it from the top guy, then we apply that to every situation going forward. We don't despise Dana White. I want to make that clear. A lot of people think, man, the media has it out for him. No, listen, when he talks, write it down. You know, usually you can produce content, you know, from what he says. Whether it's us talking about it on Junkie Radio or it's the writers writing up a piece that's on the front page, stuff that we post on social media, he's the most important figure in the sport. But at the same time, when he explains, when he gives us his take on how he handles his business or when he does something, well, that's what we use to apply when a subsequent event takes place. We kind of apply that logic, you know, what you've done in the past. And sometimes, like I say, he's not always as rich as he is and as powerful as he is and as much fun as he loves doing his job and the incredible thing he's done with MMA. He still has his bad days. And when he does, you know, it just, whoever's in the way, you know, he's going to let them have it. And I think that obviously at some point everyone gets handed that. That's why there's a lot of people that are ready to hand it back, you know. And but whatever, man. Listen, I really enjoy watching Sean O'Malley fight. I want to be clear about that. But I do feel like once you've gotten to – I have his record right here. He started off with Quiñones. Oh, no, excuse me. Tarion Ware, who I saw succeed at LFA, right? He kind of went through those steps. Andre Sukumpa, who was a CES product, I believe, back east. And then Jose Alberto Quiñones finally got a stoppage there. Then got Eddie Wineland. So now you're like, okay, that's a former champion of a big promotion. He was a former bantamweight champ. I think he was the first bantamweight champ in the WEC. Then you get Marlon Vera. Remember, Marlon Vera was streaking before. I think he lost to Aldo. And he lost it, but, you know, he reached that level. Right. And so then he gets Thomas Almeida, who I think went 20-0 before he lost a few fights, but he got past them KO. So Lewis Smolka is a guy that's competed at flyweight and bantamweight. I would say Lewis Smolka is on the same level as some of these fighters that we've talked about, depending on whether you're catching him off a win streak or maybe you catch him off a loss. He's in that mix. But again, he's we also know him as flyweight material. So, all right, the fight gets made, and Lewis can't continue. Well, I would think that Sean would look at this as an opportunity where someone that's ranked is now saying, hey, I'll step in. That should be appeasing. That should be appealing to Sean O'Malley. You know what I mean? Not someone who's debuting in the UFC. Because I think he's got to realize I'm kind of a star, and I'm fighting decent level guys, but they just may not have a ranking in front of them. Well, now this is an opportunity to do that so that I can get to my own fight night or co-main event on a big pay-per-view or whatever, you know? And I wish I would have seen a little bit more of that from him and the UFC is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, just don't make it so obvious, you know? Like, I understand it's a business, and I understand certain fighters get different pushes, but that shouldn't be happening.
Agreed. All right, folks, listen, we went a little bit of OD, but just wanted to get to that bit of news because there's a lot of Sean O'Malley fans out there. But I definitely want to thank Mike Beltran for his time today. First time we've ever had him on, if I'm not mistaken, goes with shock me if he told him, no, man, we had him on in 2008. We never had him on, so I was really, really excited to have him on. And I know for a lot of you, it coincides with the event that we had recently where it was a Caper and Negromiano and the fans grabbing. So I just wanted to say this real fast. We knew he wasn't going to be able to talk about this. But I also don't want you to think we're ambulance chasers. And as soon as it went down, we've been wanting to talk to him for a while. If you go back to our interview with Frank Trigg during the pandemic, you could see Goz and I go, really? No way. You know, when he was telling us about stuff about Mike that we never knew. And right away, we either said it or made mental notes that we had wanted that. But on the heels of us being able to talk to Sal D'Amato, you know, some of the officials are willing to do that and some aren't, or they're just maybe told not to, I guess. So don't want you to think that we didn't think of that, but like I said, I definitely wanted to be respectful and I definitely didn't want to delay in having them just to separate ourselves from 2 weeks ago. We always want to be transparent, and the honest to goodness truth is that we've always wanted to have him on. And if he would have talked about it, we would have loved to have talked about it. But have confidence in that the commissions, the refs themselves, and he said it, they hold themselves accountable. They go back and watch. They're very honest when they feel like they've done something wrong, and they try and learn and apply it, you know, on future weeks. That's why you saw Mike Beltran on the Gon Volkov card, right? Don't think that behind the scenes they aren't talking about what's going on and there aren't learning. And for those that don't know, you know, they have a group text either on WhatsApp or something where they all communicate, all of the referees. And then aside from that, they have a weekly call with judges and commission officials where they all talk about this. So have confidence in those top guns, those top officials, those top referees and judges that every week they're definitely trying to improve and communicate and do the best job that they can. But you know, we're humans and we all make errors. They're judgment calls and they're happening at a high rate of speed. We call it high speed human chess that a lot of these athletes are taking place in. I guess we need to add to it high speed violent human chess. Mm-hmm. Because think about when you've been in a club and a fight breaks out and you just kind of go like this, you know, just, and they're actually sitting there and you're within inches of seeing, bam, you know, knuckles collide with flesh and you got to decide, was that enough that he's out? Do I need to interject or does he still got life in him? Was it a legal blow? You know, did a finger swipe the eye? That's a lot going on, dude. I would be a nervous wreck to even referee two toddlers, much less two fighters.
I don't envy them at all.
Yeah. So anyway, we were always honest with you guys, and that's why I wanted to tell you that to end the show. But thanks to Mike Beltran for his time. We'll definitely have him on again. And thank you all for supporting us through, you know, all these years. And We're going to keep delivering the show. So we'll be back on Monday with another edition of MMA Junkie Radio. Look out for our video franchises of Rankings Report, Spinning Backlick, and Legend. It goes as a big part of that with Burt Watson. Keep an eye on those over at youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. And I know I've been asked this a lot. During fight week, Goz and I are going to try and get out to the strip. The studio is kind of going through a stage where it may get remodeled or maybe put on hold. But it doesn't mean that we can't get out and meet up with you guys. So I know a lot of you were asking, will there be some sort of a meetup? How are we going to watch fights? Goz and I will probably be doing a watch-along. So on fight night, we probably won't be able to meet up. But Goz and I were talking about this yesterday, and we're going to definitely try and get out to some of the fight week activities that they do have. So we hope to see you all there. Reach out to us on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George, and Goz is at the Goz on Twitter and Instagram. All right, enough of that. We are out of here. Enjoy your weekend. Let there be a champion.